Welcome to East Meets West, episode 161. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And we've just realized we've been doing this podcast since October 23rd, 2005.
Wow, that's almost 4 years. Almost.
We'll have to have a big bash in October.
Woohoo! Bring out the kettle corn candy.
And for those of you complaining about the fact that it's only been every other week lately, it used to only be every month.
Yes.
Back when I was young, East Meets West only came out every month.
Even though we lived a lot closer together.
I know, isn't that crazy? So I don't know. Maybe I'm put in nostalgic mood because Buzz Out Loud's about to do its 1,000th episode.
A millennia of episodes. Kind of, sort of.
Got some good comments last week regarding screenplays and healthcare. Mm-hmm. Wow, did we get a comment from Tech Priest?
Yes.
Response on healthcare. I have not actually finished reading it.
I read.
I remember
skimming through his thing, and I came up with a few points, but I don't remember what those are now.
Most of the responses were people saying, "Keep the podcast as it is. Don't become niche. Don't focus on one thing. Keep the subject smorgasbord," says SoCal Jess. "SoCal Jess speaks truth," says Dave Broadback. "'Tis true. SoCal Jess is correct," says Tech Priest. "Plus one," Matthew says. "I agree," Cool B says. "Please keep the free-flowing nature of the show," Justin says. So, there you go.
Good. So, shall we pick a point, or shall we just kind of...
No. That's the advice. No point.
No point?
No point at all.
No. I thought the thing was no set genre or...
Right. No, I guess we do have to have something to talk about, or...
Well, the Iranian elections just finished.
Well, people are upset over there.
Some people are upset, not everyone.
The people running in the streets throwing rocks are upset.
People in the city of Tehran.
And those are mostly young people in the city of Tehran, from what I could see.
So it's very interesting, as many of you who have been following. I think it is.
It's fascinating. Ahmadinejad, or however you properly pronounce his name, won by a fair margin, according to the vote count.
According to the vote count. Of course... The opponent, the rival, has claimed voter fraud, in that there are a lot of irregularities. I don't know what they are because no one's actually listed out what they are, like what the actual irregularities are. But it seems to have
the irregularities are they didn't vote for me.
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know. I mean, it's very easy to point at. A repressive government, which I think it's fair to say Iran is, mm-hmm. without any equivocation, and claim voter fraud. To me, there probably isn't voter fraud. It's more than likely that people just feel pressured into voting one way or another. I mean, it's not like anybody can run for president in Iran.
No, you have to be selected.
Yeah,
from the Guardian Council, and then
and I don't think the council was going to select anyone to run.
Well,
that they thought would beat Ahmadinejad.
Well, no, the thing. Well, you know, one of the points that a lot of the op-eds have written about is that the differences between the two are only by a small degree. They aren't like this huge gulf.
Yeah, it was sort of like Bush versus Kerry.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, differences certainly. But not that many.
Nope.
McCain, Obama had more differences than Bush, Kerry.
Yeah, that was a wider, especially...
And that's hilarious because McCain, much more moderate. Mm-hmm. And Obama, although he's got the reputation for being liberal, is fairly moderate as well. Mm-hmm. He's got a few extremely liberal views, but he is a pragmatist.
But
Bush and Kerry were establishment people, and that's what's going on in Iran. These are two establishment candidates.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating because it's, you know, this has led to an outbreak of, I guess, you know, for lack of a better word, a riot.
Yeah, no, they were in the streets throwing rocks, policemen, you know, with riot gear, tramping along. I heard somebody speculate that it was all a show, that they hired people to protest to make it look like Iran has freedom. I think that's way crazy talk.
I think that's a little too tinfoil hat, you know, conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
That said, a few of the reports from a couple of the blogs have said that some of the students there have noticed that a lot of people that were breaking storefronts and stuff were actually plainclothes policemen.
Oh, really? To make it look worse than it was?
Yeah, so, you know, to kind of, like, look, these people are out of control, they're breaking stuff.
Yeah.
I can't, there's no way for me to verify that,
sure.
And there's no way for other people to verify it, because I believe the visas for a foreign press ends at the end of the week, so they all have to leave. So, I mean, it's...
Hey, at least they allowed foreign press in during the election.
Yes.
A lot of countries would not do that.
I'm wondering if a lot of those visible protests happen because, well, now there's people watching. We better get our chance in while we can.
Yeah, to make yourself heard.
But, I mean, Iran, 60% of Iran's under the age of 30. So
I didn't realize that.
So there's a huge gulf of not just age, but generational gap, because a lot of the people in the council and of the upper echelons of the Iranian government were there since the founding of the theological
of the
state.
Islamic Republic. My impression of Iran is that the people are much, much less conservative than the government, and that they're actually much less conservative than a lot of the other countries in the region. But they were under an equally oppressive reign in different ways under the Shah, and saw the Islamic Republic as a positive alternative.
It's weird because the Iranian Revolution happened because of two things: both the theological group as well as the student protest group.
Right,
and they joined forces. It wasn't like the students were like, "Let's start an Islamic state." It was, "Let's get rid of the Shah and put in."
There's this Islamic group that seems to be a good ally in overthrowing the Shah.
So it's weird. And, you know, what you just said, like, you know, where most Iranians seem very, very moderate. The view that most people have of Iran is the Iranians living in Tehran in the large kind of metropolitan city.
Right.
It's like if you judged America by looking at New York.
Well, and people do that. In the United States, people do that. During elections, people do that. You know? Oh, you know, you judge California by L.A. and San Francisco. Yeah, that's a very similar to what you're saying, I think, which is there are a lot of different views out in the countryside.
And, you know, as much, you know, Ahmadinejad, as much of a populist as he is, he's reached out to the kind of rural people.
Yeah.
In the same way that Bush kind of, like, you know, a lot of his folksy, folksyisms, phrases, were kind of directed toward them. And, you know, that's what's happening here is, like, he's, okay, you know, you urban set are just a small percentage of the country. I'm going to reach out to...
There are actually a lot of parallels between Ahmadinejad and Bush.
Yes.
In the sort of the rhetoric, our country first and we don't care, and being aggressive in foreign policy and appealing to sort of a folksy,
kind of a folksy down
conservative salt of the earth mentality.
You know,
just in totally different ways. One is Christian America and the other is Islamic Iran, but
And it's a very, you know, it's, you know, in many ways it can be deceiving because of the way the press I feel that the press in many ways can actually add to the conflict rather than diffuse it. In much of the way that, you know, a lot of the foreign press and New York Times, Washington Post would kind of comment on the U.S. elections as a great change and a turning point, like during the Kerry and Bush elections, they were saying the same thing about this past, you know, Iranian election. And it was like, you know, hold on. You're kind of jumping the gun here.
Well, I think a lot of that also was borrowing from the Obama storyline. Because they want to be able to tell that same story somewhere else.
I don't think you can do that. I don't think
you shouldn't
transplant.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous.
It's not like an Arab is going to win the Iranian presidency, which would be unthinkable because they're an oppressed minority in Iran. The Persians and the Farsi, you know.
Farsi-speaking.
Yeah, the Farsi-speaking Persians.
Well, you know, the thing about of Iran is that they're not all Persians. They're, you know, the majority, yes. It's also Arab. There are also Kurds. There's also, you know, South Asians, and, you know, it's in that region where there's an influx of people from various directions. But I don't know. It always seems that all, you know, I might be dovetailing into something else or segueing into something else. But it always seems like the press always looking for that kind of kind of that one narrative that they can tell about the whole
thing. Well, yeah, they, you know what bothers me about that? It's not that they're looking for a narrative, right? That's actually good storytelling, and that's what makes compelling news, is finding the narrative and telling the story to the public in a compelling way. That's why we want conflict stories. That's why the news is always quote-unquote bad. But what bothers me is when they do a piss-poor job of it, when they try to apply the same storyline and make everything fit, rather than actually doing the work to discover what the actual storyline mm-hmm. really is, because that's going to be much more compelling in the end, but it's harder. Believe me, I understand. Yeah. It's harder to do that, but... You know, it's like, okay, so we just had the Obama storyline. Oh, here's another election. Wouldn't that be compelling if we could have the Obama story happen in Iran? It's, you know, that's like the movie pitch. Like, it's like the Obama story, well, but it's in Iran.
But see, that's I think you just hit the nail on the head. It feels like someone's pitching a story.
Yeah.
Well, let's see how many of these elements that seem kind of similar we can cobble together to kind of get the same thing.
Right. When there could be an equally or even more compelling real story that requires a little background, right?
The thing is, I think all those elements are there. It's just people don't want to kind of look at it that way. I mean, you know, as most urban people are want, you know, they see their standards of living diminishing, while those in the rural areas see their standard of living, well, not being raised or being least kept, you know, in a livable standard. So, you know, you have this kind of rural versus urban dichotomy. You also have this generational. You do kind of have a theological one in that, not everyone thinks that, you know, the theology that's issued out to them should be only from one source, mm-hmm. should maybe from a group of others. But to say that it's kind of an anti-religious movement is incorrect, because I think many of those people protesting are still, you know, if not super devout followers of Islam, or at least, you know, respectful of it. So, I mean, you know, it's one of those things. You just can't, you know, start dropping in things that, you know, you're narratives from other places just to make sense of it.
If you were a Persian restaurant, this would be a fantastic place for your ad in East Meets West.
Yes.
But we didn't get any money for that, so...
Hmm.
Instead, speaking of stories, Andres Lucero in the postings at subbrilliant.com/EMW says, WALL-E was nominated for Best Original Screenplay. I had forgotten that. Up could also very well be nominated in the same category, but Andres points out, it seems the Academy is content with segregating animated films into their own little ghetto instead of allowing them to be nominated for Best Picture. This means we get one Persepolis or WALL-E every year, along with a couple of junk food movies, to use Roger's term, to fill out the Best Animated Feature category. This is insulting. Nominating Bolt for Best Animated Feature last year is like nominating 10,000 BC for Best Picture, yet nobody says a word.
Well, the thing you have to understand about the Academy Awards is it's a selected body that votes within itself. It's not designed to be, you know, open to the public where people can say, yeah, I like that. That's what you have the Golden Globes or the Emmys. I think Emmys are also
Emmys
industry.
Are industry. The Golden Globe is actually the foreign press.
People's choice. So the problem with that is, you know, you have those same kind. When you have such a small group of people, you know, kind of picking amongst each other, you're going to have that same kind of rivalry, politicking. You have all those same issues that you have in a, you know, in an election period, any kind of election period.
But you saw Up.
Yes.
And?
I liked it. I did not get teary. I did not. There was one part where I did kind of well up with emotion, good. But I did not get
teary. You are
teary
not up. A heartless bastard.
No.
You at least.
I know. I liked the story. I thought it was sweet. I wasn't like pulling out the tissue paper to dot my eyes.
I wasn't through the whole thing. I had a different point in the movie where I welled up, same as you. But
yeah
there, it's, you know, there's some heartstring tugging moments. But I thought it was an excellent story, right?
I like the story. I was kind of thrown for a loop with the, see if I say spoiler alert.
Okay.
All right. So just so anyone who hasn't watched, you'd probably just stop now. The number of dogs, I thought it was kind of stretching the credulity.
Was a little bit over. Like, I think it was intentionally exaggerated, you know.
But, you know, it was also very paint by noise, paint by numbers.
Paint by noise? I want to see that.
Paint by numbers movie in that, you know, I kind of figured out where it would end up. It was very predictable, but it didn't make it less enjoyable, though.
Exactly. Well, a lot of movies are predictable, but the difference is, do they keep you entertained and engaged on the way to where you kind of know you're going?
Is it compelling enough for you to wait until the end?
I mean, there's also the ones that are not predictable. I actually saw The Brothers Bloom. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that.
That one kept me guessing. Now, maybe I just, you know, wasn't very smart when I watched it yesterday, but I didn't know where it was going all the time. And that's fantastic. That's rare in a movie where you don't really know where it's going. Up was not that way. Yeah, you know where it's going, but you're still entertained.
Yeah.
You're still
engaged
compelled.
With the movie.
Yeah.
No, I highly recommend that movie to anyone.
And you don't know exactly how they're going to get there. Yes. You know where it's going. That's what I hate is when it's like, okay, and now she's going to get up and leave the church. Oh, there she goes. Okay, now he's going to run after. Oh, there he goes. You know, it wasn't like that. You're like, every step, you're like, I know exactly what he's going to do next. I know exactly what he's going to say next.
And then you have the problem with movies that do the exact opposite, where this is the point where he's supposed to run after her, but he won't. And he's going to make kind of flippant statement, and it's going to be really funny.
There he is, making the flippant statement.
Where they're so, where it's, you know, predictable because it's precisely, it's not the same trope, but rather a 180 degree exact opposite.
It's an anti-trope.
That becomes just as predictable.
I don't know. I still believe in the trope.
The trope in the cave? A tunnel trope? The troposphere?
I'm all choked up thinking about Up.
Oh. Oh, how sweet.
No, I still believe in using tropes for storytelling. But I gotta tell you, Roger, sometimes it makes you cry. They do it so poorly. No. There's creative ways of using the trope, and there's other ways.
I was watching The Goonies today. At home. There's a trope.
Wow.
Kids find treasure map and have exciting adventure.
Yeah, I don't know. Does that one hold up? I haven't seen it in years.
Has that kid read Short Round from Temple of Doom?
Uh-huh.
So his English, not that, you know, his accent would bother me, but it was just like, then I just see him in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom. It's like a very odd character out. Actually, a lot of the characters seem kind of... It's very 80s. It's just like, hey, let's get a bunch of kids.
That's what
together.
I was wondering about. I was listening to Extra Life Radio a few weeks back. And they were talking about Star Trek. And they were having the discussion of whether or not there were any attractive women in Star Trek The Next Generation. And one of the key points of their discussion was the 80s-ness of that. Like, it just gets more and more dated the more time goes by.
So attractiveness is somehow tied with the 80s? Explain.
Well, they're just saying, you know, you've got Beverly Crusher with the big 80s hair, and that was a turnoff, I think, for Scott. And then Deanna Troi, where, you know, with her leotard on.
Actually, what turned me off on Deanna Troi is her whole kind of sensitivity thing kind of really annoyed me, because it reminded me of those people that always try to, like, counsel you. It's like they're
because she's a counselor.
But that's
counselor
my
Troi.
But that's my point. Is like everything is like a freaking psych. You know, it's like a psych evaluation.
Why do you feel that way, Roger?
Exactly, it's annoying. And then actually, the only one I liked, they killed her off.
Oh, Tasha Yar,
because she was the only one. She was the only female on the ship that would kick ass,
and she had like Olivia Newton-John physical hair. So, Like, the point isn't so much about the attractiveness or unattractiveness of certain members of the crew, although Patrick Stewart, as they pointed out, was named the sexiest man alive at one point.
He ages well.
Yeah.
It's, of course, the thing is...
He's the only one that you look at and you're like, he looks pretty much the same. He's going to look the same if he plays it now as he did back then. Yeah. Well, and Worf, because he's in makeup, but... Data actually looks dated. That's pretty...
Yeah.
You know, you can see his makeup.
Like, oh, look, it's a synthetic android.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to a natural android.
Right. If they can have biomimetic or whatever it is in Voyager, the biology, why couldn't they have that in Data?
I don't know. Well, see, there's a lot of things that... Okay, I'm going to break the fifth wall or the fourth wall and kind of...
Breaking walls all over the place.
And skewer Star Trek. You have the transporter, right?
That's breaking the fifth wall?
Hold on.
Okay.
You have the transporter. Now, this transporter basically separates your atoms into the component parts and ships you off somewhere else.
Right.
So, if you have a disease, couldn't they just beam you back without the disease in you?
Right. Could they isolate the the molecule, you know, the germs, the bacteria, or whatever.
Because
it is.
They would have to beam them back everywhere anyway, right?
Or
because
cancer.
You're doing it at the subatomic level.
That's why nobody has diseases.
Yeah, there's lots of people had like aging illnesses and.
Yeah, but those were like freaky alien people with weird alien illnesses.
But they beamed them back anyway, so it's like
yeah. But those could be systemic, not invasive.
And they couldn't beam back like Geordi LaForge with new eyes.
No, but that remember the thing with Geordi was like they could have given him eye replacements, but he didn't want it.
But they came later, didn't they?
Yeah, remember later on he gets android eyes. It's like, oh, you'll take android eyes, but you wouldn't take real eyes? I don't get it. That one.
All right. Now, if you're a true Star Trek fan, which I know you are, you need to buy the Star Trek animated series.
I used to have, actually. I don't have them anymore. A couple of VHS copies of the animated series.
I'm running.
Do you like the one with Spock's pet?
Yes.
When he runs off to...
That's actually one of the first instances where you see Spock as a child. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Now, for people who might not realize it, during the great dearth of Star Trek
programming...
Early 70s, they did a cartoon, but it was actually really well written.
And it was voiced by many of the actors.
No, it was voiced by the entire cast. Yeah. So everyone you see... Except for a couple of the aliens, they didn't have Chekhov, so they replaced.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I thought there were a couple people.
They replaced Chekhov with an alien,
right?
But you know, the Nurse Chapel's there, Spock. They're all voiced by the same actors. I really enjoy it. My sister hates cartoons and she watches it.
Really?
Because the stories are just as interesting. In some cases, I think even more fleshed out. Because it has to meet that 30-minute running time.
Oh, uh-huh.
So you don't. There's not this. I shouldn't say well fleshed out, but it doesn't seem as drawn out.
Mm.
Like you get to the point, you get the answer, you get to.
It's compressed.
Yes.
Because it's not an hour long show.
Yeah.
What is it? Like 22 minutes?
Something like that. Yeah. And I mean, they do some really like the one with the giant Spock.
Uh huh.
Well,
yeah, they were not limited. That was the other thing is they weren't limited by a special effects budget, which they were in the TV show. With animated, you can make Spock giant. You know, you just draw him bigger. It doesn't cost anything.
So I'm still amazed. It's like it holds it pretty well. So if you're into Star Trek, you should at least rent Star Trek the Animated Series. I think there's two seasons.
There you go. You have the recommendation. Anything else before we wrap up? I've just been playing a lot of Warcraft. That's been draining away a lot of my attention.
I've been doing HDR. I did shot a bunch of photos yesterday. I went around the city,
uh-huh.
And I'm trying to do it to get put it together so it's like tone mapped and like
oh wow
high contrasty so it looks all pretty. I've had mixed success.
Are you going to put them up anywhere for people to see?
Yeah, it's actually for Techzilla Monday.
Okay,
so as soon as that's done, hopefully I'll have them up. The thing is, I'm trying to find software that people can use for free that does it for you, and I've had mixed success. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. We get so used to how prevalent free software is these days that it's almost shocking when you come across something you can't find free software for.
And it's weird because I actually haven't purchased any new software since I bought Vista late last year.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's because, like, you know, OpenOffice works just fine for me. I use a free, you know, antivirus. My browser is free.
Mm-hmm.
My MP3 player is free, so it's nice. I, you know, even games. I have basically a bunch of games that I got press reviews on. So
yeah, see, that's not fair though. Most people don't get that.
But I don't. The thing is, like, I don't really play games anymore, and the games I do play are all flash based.
Uh huh.
So, like, you know, Crush the Castle or something like that, where it's all flash based, and you just click, and it's free too.
Nothing wrong with free. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Make your comments at subbrilliant.com/EMW. And
hopefully we'll talk to you next week. If not, soon.
All right.
Bye. See ya.